We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m. And if you miss us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
Make sure you're following us on all social media because we out here.
Yes.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, House Party, YouTube. We twitching. Black Planet. Somebody definitely said OnlyFans. You gotta go ahead and get your subscription. MySpace, Tinder, catch us ticking on the talk, and Google Plus.
In this episode, we'll be putting you up on the Atlanta shooting suspect telling the police that he targeted massage parlors because of sex addiction. Mm-hmm. And Dijon Trump is coming back in not so rare form.
All Oregon adults become eligible May 1st, and the state expects to have enough vaccines by the end of May for every single Oregon adult. Mm. CDC likely to extend eviction moratorium with millions of people behind on rent.
But first, let's jump into college athletes. Balling like we March Madness.
Hey.
While declaring they are not NCAA property.
Hello.
As the NCAA men's basketball tournament tipped off in Indiana, some of the players want to remind everyone of the control that the NCAA exerts over their lives, including their names, images, and likenesses. Under the hashtag, not NCAA property, a protest was launched Wednesday by Rutgers basketball player Geo Baker, Iowa basketball player Jordan Bohannon, and Michigan basketball player Isaiah Livers, all upperclassmen on Big Ten teams. The NCAA owns my name, image, and likeness, tweeted Baker. Someone on music scholarship can profit from an album. Someone on academic scholarship can have a tutor service. For people who say an athletic scholarship is enough, anything less than equal rights is never enough. I am not NCAA property. The argument is simple, Baker wrote on Thursday. We deserve an opportunity to create money from our name, image, and likeness. If you don't agree with that statement, then you're saying that you believe that I, a human being, should be owned by something else. The players launched the effort with the support of the National College Players Association, which says the protest is meant to underscore their concern that the NCAA too often treats college athletes like dollar signs rather than people. Another Rutgers player, Luke Nathan, noted that as a walk-on, he pays full tuition, but similarly, his name, image, and likeness are owned by the NCAA. This is a point we should think about when the rhetoric is often centered around scholarships being the college athlete's collateral. After a sports reporter tweeted that the player should be grateful, Baker replied, "Think you can definitely be grateful to play this game while also understanding there's more that should be on the table. Players isolated entire year to help make this tournament happen. NCAA rewarded with $900 million. Players rewarded with free deodorant and small box meals. The NCAA has been under increasing pressure to change its rules. As ESPN notes, six states have already passed laws that make the NCAA's current rules on amateurism illegal in the future, and others are making their way through state legislators. The protest also comes as the Supreme Court prepare to hear arguments on March 31st in the case of NCAA versus Alston, in which it will consider whether the NCAA's limits on compensation for student athletes violate the nation's antitrust laws. The athletes have declared four requests. By July 1st, changes to the NCAA rules to allow all college athletes the freedom to secure representation and receive pay for use of their name, image, and likeness. A meeting with NCAA President Mark Emmert. Meetings with state and federal lawmakers regarding laws to ensure physical, academic, and financial protections for college athletes. And that the Supreme Court rule in support of college athletes in NCAA versus Alston, and to not give the NCAA any power to deny us equal freedoms. Many other college basketball players have chimed in with the hashtag, as have athletes from other sports. Mitch Goulet, who played soccer at the Division III Westfield State University, said he'd lost his eligibility to play after he was paid $150 by Puma for a video. Goulet said he takes full ownership of having broken NCAA rules. I'm not trying to absolve myself of any wrongdoing. The purpose of this tweet is to show how greedy and restrictive those rules are. Goulet wrote, I played D3, so I was not on any type of athletic scholarship. Just played for the love of the game.
I can't tell you how happy I am that this is happening.
Yes.
Like, this has just been a point of contention with me for a very long time. And I remember, like, watching, you know, 2K blow up like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just imagining, just seeing all the excitement around people that were excited about playing this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really, like, once I stopped playing in high school, I wasn't really mm-hmm. checking for sports like that. But the fact that they were that engaged at the college level, mm-hmm. and some people more excited about college basketball than they are over, you know, the yeah. NBA.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, this is tight. Like, so the first thing I'm thinking is, again, not being completely, you know, submerged into it, was like, yo, these college athletes, they must be getting it. Like, this mm-hmm. is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then people were like, they get nothing. Like, they get meal plans. That's right. it. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm seeing people buying jerseys. Mm-hmm. How can you be licensed to a video game and not get paid? And then as I started just discovering more and more about it, I was like, this is disgusting. Because on some real, we already know this is just the midway point mm-hmm. to where they're trying to end up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a much more, it's a bottleneck. Everyone in the NCAA, of course, isn't going to make it
right.
to the pros. For a lot of people, the buck stops there, but they're still mm-hmm. generating millions of dollars
yes.
for their institution. You know what I'm yes. saying? Like, and then it just yes. stops?
Yes.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah, and to know not $150, like $150, that's what outside costs. It costs $150 right. to go outside on a Saturday.
And just stand there.
And knowing that, you know, these athletes put their lives into this. And this idea that it's almost like a Death Row record days of,
yeah,
we gonna provide all the stuff. You don't get the monies, but
right.
you get to enjoy your time. There's fun.
Right.
We're paying you back with a fun experience. And knowing yeah. that these players are coming out here, these athletes, these humans are coming out here giving their all. And like you say, the buck stops.
Yeah.
There's more pandemonium around, in my opinion, March Madness,
yeah.
you're watching these brackets and stuff happen,
yeah.
than the playoffs for the NBA,
yep.
right?
Yep.
And the money that is generated, like you said, these games are top-notch, always have been. These sales,
yep.
people rep this stuff way harder
way.
Than some of the professional teams. And yep. to just say your scholarship, or in some of these cases, there's no scholarship involved. You're just here, you're paying your way and paying to play, and they're able to do what they want with you.
Right. I mean,
now, that's the case. Why don't y'all, if you're pushed in, you should take the names off the jerseys. There should be none of that, right? It should just right. be a number on a jersey.
Right.
Essentially an evergreen item.
Right. I mean, there's a couple of different things. So, like, yeah, you're having fun, but let's really look at it, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fun is middle school, Bitty League. The fun mm-hmm. is high school. College? Nah. The facilities that these athletes are working, this is the pro level.
Yes.
The money that these institutions are spending on these athletes is pro level. These yes. are pros.
Yes.
Period. They just don't yes. make it to the next. But they're pros. You know what I'm yes. saying? Like, they're working. These people are sustaining injuries that will mm-hmm. last them the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And what do they get for it? Like, you got to be kidding me. I'm so I'm so happy this is finally happening. Seriously.
Same.
Much overdue. I'm still on the high from that. All right. So, up next. Atlanta shooting suspect told police he targeted massage parlors because of a sex addiction. Interesting. Law enforcement officials said Robert Aaron Long, the suspect in the killing of 8 people at 3 massage parlors in the Atlanta area, told investigators that he targeted the businesses because he blamed them for providing an outlet for his addiction to sex. According to the Cherokee County Sheriff's Office, Long took responsibility for the shootings and said he acted alone. Captain Jay Baker said, he said it was not racially motivated. It's a temptation for him that he wanted to eliminate. 6 of the victims were women of Asian descent, officials said. At least 4 were of Korean descent. The 21-year-old is charged with 8 counts of murder and 1 count of aggravated assault. He's being held without bond and waived the right to an attorney. The shootings happened Tuesday evening at 3 separate spas, the first in Acworth, Georgia, north of Atlanta, and the others across the street from each other in the city. Sheriff Frank Reynolds said, "We believe he frequented these places in the past and may have been lashing out." The sheriff's office shared on social media some surveillance video images from the scene, and Long's family immediately called in. Mr. Reynolds said, noting the family had continued to cooperate with investigators. Atlanta Interim Police Chief Rodney Bryant said about an hour after the Ackworth shootings, police in Atlanta responded to a report of a robbery at the Gold Spa in the city's northeast. Police found three women dead from apparent gunshot wounds. While there, police said they were alerted to gunshots across the street at another spa, aromatherapy. Officers said they found a woman there who had been fatally shot. At least two people called 911 to report the Atlanta shootings, according to released audio tapes of the calls. One woman said she was calling from inside Gold Spa to report a robbery involving a white man with a gun. Quoted as saying, "I'm hiding right now. Please come, okay?" A second woman called to report a shooting at aromatherapy across the street. She said a man with a gun had shot a woman at the door, and she was unresponsive. "Everybody's scared and everyone's hiding," she said. Long was captured in Crisp County, 150 miles southeast of Atlanta. Long bought a gun earlier Tuesday at Big Woods Goods, a hunting and shooting store in Canton, Georgia, according to Matt Gilko, an attorney representing the store. Mr. Kilgo said, "The store is cooperating with investigators, and there was no indication that there was anything inappropriate about the purchase." Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms said Mr. Long was en route to Florida, and she thanked law enforcement officers for their quick work arresting him. "This could have been significantly worse," she said. "It is very likely there would have been more victims." White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said Wednesday that President Biden had been briefed and the White House officials are in touch with Atlanta's mayor's office and the Federal Bureau of Investigations. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland has also been briefed on the shootings, a Justice Department official said. Many people are still suspicious that race may have played a role, despite officials stating the suspect told them his primary motivation was anger about his sex addiction.
So what I want to start with on this, we've touched on this too many times, is just how the lighter the skin pigment, the more excuses come for the behavior or tried justifications. Right. What I don't like is how they keep pulling this sex addiction thing, like it's like painting him as a victim of his vices.
Right.
He's just a murderer.
That's it.
You're a murderer. Like this, there's nothing else that we need to be addressing this man as. Where is the investigation needed? Why are we trying to figure out the psychology? And I wish that this same type of grace was extended to people selling cigarettes on a street corner.
Man.
People taking nice little jogs during the day, checking out construction.
Right.
I just wish that that same type of energy was given. And it's moments like this that we're able to see, like, these are choices.
Yep.
This was a choice.
Yeah.
And everyone's picking it up and running with it. And this is not, there's no way that this is cool.
No.
There's no way that, I guess the idea of we shouldn't allow, right? We don't necessarily own, so it's not something we can't allow, but it's making sure that on our platforms,
yeah,
we talk about this the way that it needs to be talked about.
Yes, absolutely.
All that addiction, I've been horny many times in my life.
Yeah.
No. And to give somebody that piece, that's, and even the way it was painted originally with having a bad day.
That part.
Having a bad day. I've had a bad day. You've had a bad day. We've all had bad days. And let's even step away from that and the idea going back to, if we're going to give it to one, how come this isn't spread around?
Right.
You know, we see a lot of these pullovers and interactions, and it never comes up if that person, what type of day that person was having.
Right. Right.
Nobody cares about that.
Yeah.
Not nobody. Let me step back. These media outlets and these people who are upholding the two words that everybody runs from, white supremacy.
Uh-huh. Yep. They don't care about no bad days, no good days, none of them days. No, not at all.
21-year-old, you know, I want to see, you know, if like the last young kid who went somewhere and shot some things up and got treated with all of the courtesies as he jumped state lines and some more things and had a GoFundMe raise a whole lots of monies.
Boy.
If that's going to turn up here for the people who understand the sex addiction. I'm sorry. This one is one of those ones.
I mean, listen, you know, I agree with everything you're saying. Yeah. It's just like, he's a murderer.
Yeah.
Okay. There are many witnesses. He's admitted to it. There's nothing else to talk about.
Super predator. Maybe that's what this is.
Yeah.
Super predator.
Yeah.
Won't get used in anybody's media outlets, but you're here with Liberated Black Media.
So we're going to do what we're going to do. Right. Like, so this whole sex addiction thing, if y'all want to delve down that road and have discussions, that's when he's already been sentenced and he's incarcerated and someone wants to talk to him about his motivations and whatever deep-rooted problems he has. I don't want to hear that coming from law enforcement. I don't want to hear any of that. I don't want to hear this bad day. I don't want to hear none of that coming from law enforcement at all. Like, if I'm interrogating this dude and he kicks the sex addiction and that he was having a bad day, that's not something that makes it to the press. That doesn't even make it out of the room in which I'm interrogating it, because I'm going to look back at him like, bad day? Okay. Next question. I'm going to continue my interrogation. Like, that's not something that we pull out that becomes a headline anywhere. Like, you've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. And if your sex addiction revolves around the fetishization of Asian women, then guess what? It's racial. What are we trying?
Because people identify racially motivated with black and white. And I think people forget a lot of times that it extends further than that. And I think that this idea that how the Asian culture has been kind of pushed over to be the good minorities. This way that it's painted, so it's not grouped in the same type of way.
Right. Right. Hey, it's the whole joint's disgusting. It's wild.
Well, running off of that, we got a Dijon Trump returning to his second favorite place in the world, the interwebs. Oh boy, Lil Fo5, who in my opinion should replace rapper Future as the Toxic King, will make his way back into the social media realm within these next few months. And with his own service that will completely redefine the game, says his top advisor. Jason Miller told Fox News' Media Buzz that the former commander in tweet will be back online in 2 to 3 months and will launch a new platform that he claimed would attract tens of millions of users. I do think we're going to see President Trump returning to social media in probably about 2 or 3 months here with his own platform, Miller said. This is something that I think will be the hottest ticket in social media.
Jason Miller is a moron, by the way. He's like, this is a dude that will look into the camera and tell you the sky is purple. Like, flat anything Trump said. Jason Miller is the absolute worst, dog. Like, terrible, terrible.
And he keeps going. It's going to completely redefine the game. And everybody is going to be waiting and watching to see what exactly President Trump does. But it will be his own platform, Miller said. Miller wouldn't go into detail about the new platform, but said the former president has been holding a lot of high-powered meetings at his Mar-a-Lago, Florida resort, and numerous companies are interested in helping get it off the ground. I feel like that was written by Trump.
Him, yes. 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 I mean, with very high-powered people.
Yes. Yes. Twitter dropped Trump from his platform in January, just days after a mob of his supporters stormed the Capitol as Congress was certifying the 2020 election for President Biden.
First off, the platform, I'm making these predictions right now. Listeners, hear me now and care. The platform will be trash. It will not launch on time. They will come up with a reason as to why they're pushing it back. And once it does finally, if ever, get launched, it's going to get hacked continuously. It's going to be flooded with people outside of the Trump camp. Mm-hmm. When they get on there and troll him. It's going... Listen, if, and I know some of you don't want to admit it, but if you really miss the madness that was President Trump, you'll be able to tune into this new television show, this new piece of content that will be people going hard at him through his own app. Oh my gosh. Yes. This is so crazy.
I don't even have much. I don't have nothing.
What's there to add? Jason Miller up here with all the worst phrases. Like, it really sounds like it was written by an 11-year-old. Yeah, it's a lot of high-powered game. Meetings. It's going to change the game.
You guys, go ahead and smash that like button when you see it.
If you guys could give us a rating. Like, you don't. Yeah. You really need attention that bad. You got to make your own app. Oh, my wow. God. Terrible. Mm. Well, we got some really good news here. Oregon's new COVID vaccine eligibility timeline. Governor Kate Brown released the new vaccine eligibility timeline Friday morning that moves up some eligibility dates and establishes May 1st as the date all Oregonians 16 and older will be eligible to receive the COVID-19 vaccine. Starting Monday, March 22nd, counties that attest in writing that they vaccinated the majority of the residents 65 and older can begin vaccinations for the next eligible group. Migrant and seasonal farm workers who have already started working can start receiving the vaccine that day. On March 29th, all adults 45 to 64 who have underlying health conditions, agricultural, migrant, and seasonal farm workers, people in congregate living, and those experiencing homelessness will be eligible for the vaccine. 3 weeks after that, on April 19th, frontline workers as defined by the CDC, including grocery workers, public transit workers, and U.S. Postal Service workers, multi-generational household members, and adults 16 to 44 who have underlying health conditions can start receiving the vaccine. 12 days later, on May 1st, all Oregonians 16 and older will become eligible to receive the vaccine. I feel like the way that they're announcing it, it's almost like when you're boarding a plane. Rows 3 through 15.
Right.
During Friday's briefing, both Brown and Allen were clear that the timeline is dependent on the federal government sending the expected amount of doses to the state. They also said that after each date in the timeline, when more Oregonians become eligible, there will be a temporary bottleneck as the supply of vaccines catches up to the number of people trying to get a vaccination. Even though all Oregon adults may be eligible May 1st, not everyone will be able to get an appointment immediately. I want to be crystal clear, Allen said. Not every Oregonian will have a vaccination appointment waiting for them. It will take a few weeks for supply to catch up to demand. Allen said that as long as the expected number of doses arrives from the federal government, the state will have enough vaccines by the end of May for every Oregon adult to get a first dose. Allen outlined how the state expects to reach that target. March 29th, the total eligible people in Oregon will exceed 2 million. By that time, Oregon will have received about 1.4 million doses and will have administered first doses to close to 1.2 million people. By April 19th, the state will have the vaccines and capacity to administer between 1.7 and 1.9 million doses, which is more than 3/4 of the eligible population at that time. April 19th, the total number of eligible people will exceed 2.8 million. Allen cautioned that there will be a temporary traffic jam as supply catches up to demand. But by May 1st, the state expects to have received approximately 2.5 million doses, enough supply to vaccinate almost 90% of eligible people at that time. May 1st, the total number of eligible people will exceed 3.2 million. Again, the state will see a temporary bottleneck while supply catches up to demand. But by the end of May, Oregon expects to receive 3.3 million first doses, enough vaccine to give every Oregon adult at least one shot. Man.
Jeez.
Let's get it cracking.
Yeah, they've got it going. I'm definitely feeling a bit more at ease as the shots have been rolling out and people have been, you know, doing their thing. Some people that I respect and, you know, trust their life decisions have went through both rounds, and nothing has started to grow.
Right.
I still want to know if they put the chip in there. I've not.
You haven't been able to receive any conclusive data as to whether or not they're putting the chip in the junk.
Yeah, we got to see if it's some new self-replicating technology.
Is it nanobites? What's in this? You got some nano machines in there? What are y'all doing? What exactly?
But yeah, I'm glad this is happening in these numbers.
Yeah,
those beginning fumbles definitely had everybody on edge.
Yeah, listen up, y'all. Don't start sharing chapstick and blowing birthday cakes.
Man, yeah, it's been a lot of open mouth eating and people feeling more at ease about coughing in general.
Yeah, nah. Mm-mm. I'm gonna be vaccinated.
I still feel like coughing in public is an act of domestic terrorism.
Yes, you chose violence. Yes,
yeah, you're choosing violence every time.
What's wrong with you?
And even moving forward, like I think I discussed before, I'm keeping my mask. Like, bruh, I enjoy having my mouth open when I be walking around places that I didn't understand in my whole life. As we've talked about mouth breathers and made them out to be this outcast in society, now I understand it.
You're so, like, I too.
it be looking wild under that mask, and it'd be so comfortable to where when I try to just close my mouth, I'd be like, why? Like, this is comfortable.
Who am I trying to impress?
Right. This is where everybody get heavy, bro.
Yo, for real, I do not trust people. They're going to be out here lying, talking about, oh, yeah, I got vaccinated. Did you?
Right.
Did you? Let me just, thank you. You know what? Yeah. I'm going to wear two masks because you're not to be trusted. You're not to be trusted. No. If I can't trust you to bring my change back, if I ask you to go pay for something at the bar, then no.
We have the CDC extending the eviction moratorium with millions of Americans behind on their rents.
Come on.
The Center for Disease Control and Prevention has taken a key step towards extending an order aimed at preventing evictions during the ongoing COVID-19 outbreak. The CDC order is currently set to expire in less than 2 weeks. Housing advocates have warned for months that allowing this protection for renters to lapse would spark a tsunami of evictions, putting upward of 1 million people out of their homes. The CDC has now sent a proposal to the Office of Management and Budget for regulatory review. The CDC hasn't responded to a request for comment, and the listing on the OMB site doesn't indicate how long the CDC might extend the eviction order for. The move doesn't mean absolutely that the agency will extend the order, but that now appears likely. It means that CDC likely intends to extend and perhaps improve the CDC order on eviction, says Shamus Roller, the executive director of the National Housing Law Project. He says the order is preventing many evictions, but that it has loopholes and needs to be strengthened. Nearly 10 million Americans are behind on their rent payments, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. In the last two COVID-19 relief bills, Congress has approved more than $50 billion for rental assistance. But the state and local application portals that the money will flow through are only just now opening up to take applications. So the vast majority of people who need the help won't have gotten it by the end of March when the CDC eviction order expires. That's one reason advocates have been calling on the CDC to extend the order. Studies have found that evictions spread COVID-19 and result in more deaths from the disease since people are forced into more crowded living situations and often double up with other families or family members. That's the reason the CDC issued its order back in September, trying to contain the outbreak. Landlord groups have applauded the rental assistance money from Congress, but they're opposed to the CDC extending its order, saying landlords need to have the right to move forward with the eviction cases a year into the pandemic.
Look at that. They much rather start evicting people than to give them extra time to apply for the assistance that will
come. But it's been a year.
Right. Like, y'all waited this long. You can't.
The year marker, people love year marker.
Yeah.
Like, it's been a whole year.
It's been a year. And that is nuts.
Has anything changed? Like, what are you talking about? Like, you know?
You know, I do, I would like to know, because no matter what, no matter when this is lifted, like, people aren't going to be back at zero, right? They're not going to be back at a flesh. So how does that transition happen when it does come? You know, these extensions are going to, you know, they'll play out. Hopefully this makes its way through. But it's like, what are we doing in the long, like, for the long-term vision? We're throwing a bunch of these, what they call them, sutures?
Yeah.
over the open wound? Like, what are we doing to get this stitched up so that people are not outside?
Yeah. And then again, these people are in these situations directly related to employment. Like, it's not like as soon as outside opens back up, everybody's back to their jobs.
Right.
Businesses have closed.
Closed.
Yeah.
Like, shut down. And this completely is not through the typical narrative of laziness.
Right.
Right. Everything they tried to throw out before, people that need assistance. Like, this is hit in all the brackets of the taxes.
Right.
Yeah. So,
We will see. We will see. All right. But you know what? Make sure you check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 8 p.m. as we sit down and run up the numbers.
Run up the numbers.
Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron needs to resign.
Hosted by Cam Jones and DJ Ambush.
Brett Hankinson needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Special thanks to Cam Jones and DJ Ambush.
Hey,
for writing this stuff.
Miles Cosgrove needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Music by Seeds.
Jonathan Mattingly also needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death. I'm not playing these games with y'all, losers.
All this for 50.
Here we are.